Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Hey, good Saturday morning. The election's behind us and the holidays are on the way. You know, let's take a break from the traditional political thing because we've just lived with so much politics. I want to talk about something that's timeless. What we're discussing this morning may be the answer for our economy, regardless of what happens politically. We've already have 6,000 years of human experience regarding this, not to mention what's recorded in the Bible to guide us. So what is timeless? What has lasted from Pharaoh's throne in Egypt to Rome to the founding of our republic to now the most coveted asset held by central banks around the world? I'm talking about precious metals, particularly gold, and really both gold and silver. And joining me this morning is my fellow treasure hunter and pirate money Mike Carter. Mike and I have been friends for more than three decades and colleagues for the past 10 years. Welcome, Mike.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be here today, especially when I find out we're gonna kind of dedicate this show to pirate money. That's gonna be a fun one.
Yeah, on Pirate Money Radio, we'll talk gold and silver, pieces of eight, and gold doubloons. You hear this?
Perfect timing, Russell. Nice.
Yeah, takes me back to the old days when I was a kid. Listen to the Hardy Boys mystery on Mickey Mouse Club.
I remember being in my grandma's house with that playing in the background in her little den there.
Yeah, that, you know, this came out in 1956.
That's I saw the rerun.
You know, gold doubloon, that is a double escudo. I think I've got one of those here. Here we go. There, Mike, that's a double escudo or a gold doubloon right there.
Yeah, I like it.
What's the year on that one?
Well, that might be beyond my eyesight. Is it at the top of the page?
I think it's 1787 is my intention.
Yes, it is, 1787.
The founding of the Constitution.
And it's still nice and shiny. It's holding its value well.
Yeah, that's Spanish money, highly sought after pirates. It contained 0.218 troy ounces of 22-karat gold. The melt value at today's gold price would be over $500. That's not bad for a tiny little
coin,
right?
Look how small that is, $500.
That's the melt value. Of course, it's worth much more as a collectible because it's a really fine condition with only surface hairlines from 1787.
Yeah, it's high quality, but I look at that, and that reminds me of the difference between a collectible and what we're talking about, functional currency, which we're going to be able to do with gold and pirate money in the near future here.
Yeah, I've got one that's not quite as nice. That is a gold doubloon, but this is a Spanish milled dollar. This is from 1783, and I'll pass that to you. That's a Spanish milled dollar. It's also known as a real de ocho, or peso, or a piece of eight. It could be divided into eight bits, and each bit was worth 12 and a half cents. Two bits make a quarter, all right? Remember, two bits, four bits, six bits, a dollar? Do you remember that phrase, Mike?
Yeah, yes, I do.
Or how about shaving a haircut, the knock? That's the famous knock. That's shaving a haircut, two bits. The whole idea was a bit was one-eighth of a piece of eight. Spanish milled dollar is supposed to be a measure of silver. It's originally 0.8219 troy ounces of fine silver, and that's the basis for the American silver dollar, which was officially set at 0.7734 troy ounces of fine silver. Doubloons and pieces of eight. When you hear that, what do you think?
Pirate money. And I'm just looking at this one. This is dated like
1783.
Wow. Yep. And the fact that this is around, that tells you how this is a store of value. The fact that from 1783 is still kind of around, collectible, in circulation. It's not lost somewhere.
Nearly a full ounce of fine silver in that, you know, and that would have value. All right, so let me quote from Wikipedia about the Spanish dollar. That's the Spanish dollar, and then the doubloons that were based on the dollar. It says the Spanish dollar was the coin which was the original United States dollar and was based. It remained legal tender in the United States until the Coinage Act of 1857. Many other currencies around the world, such as the Japanese yen and the Chinese yuan, were initially based on the Spanish dollar and other eight real coins. So that's pretty interesting. Most theories trace the origin of the dollar symbol, you know, the S with the two lines through it, which originally had two vertical bars, to the pillars of Hercules wrapped in ribbons that appear on the reverse side of the Spanish dollar. So that's what we've got here. You see the pillars there, and then you put the intertwined through the two pillars. That's the origin of the dollar sign. Really, it's the beginning of modern money. The Spanish milled dollar uses the word milled. That means it was made on a machine. That's because it was produced on a machine for uniformity. Before that, they would just hammer out silver, and you weren't quite sure if you were getting an exact amount of silver or not. The Spanish milled dollar with the ridges around it let you know nothing's been shaved off of it.
Helps with that trust factor back. That was the trust factor back then.
That was. This is the money that was used by our founders, founding fathers. In fact, have you heard that story about George Washington was so strong he could take a silver dollar and throw it across the Potomac? Have you heard that?
I've heard the story. I was not aware, and I just saw in the brief here that we've recreated that.
Well, it was recreated actually in 1936. It's number one, there was a guy that says, all these stories about George Washington chopping down a cherry tree and not lying and all these things, I'm tired of those. I'm going to go disprove all of them, including this notion that he could throw a silver dollar across the Potomac. Well, actually, if you read the legend, it was he threw a silver dollar across not the Potomac River, but the, where was it? A river just outside of his home. The Rappahannock River, and he threw it supposedly across that, which would be through over, you know, it's a huge distance for any normal person to throw across. So in 1936, a man named Walter Johnson put the myth to the test, and he tried his own silver dollar toss. And so in February 26, 1936, a crowd of thousands gathered at George Washington's boyhood home near Fredericksburg, Virginia, to celebrate the 204th anniversary of his birth. The main attraction of the day's festivities included the dedication of 200 cherry trees to be planted along the boulevard to lead to Fredericksburg. But that afternoon, former Washington Senators pitcher great Walter Johnson attempted to throw a silver dollar across the Rappahannock River. Legend had it Washington accomplished the feat as a young boy. Johnson, who was 48 years old, had been elected in the inaugural five-man class of the Baseball Hall of Fame earlier that month, and so he gets out there and tries to throw it. Do you think he did?
I think he did.
Absolutely, he did. And so the guy that questioned George Washington had to apologize and say, nope, it is possible to throw that across the river. His throw was like 350 to 375 feet. He did it twice successfully. And there are several points of the story. First, it was a silver dollar, and that was the currency of the day from boyhood George Washington to the Constitution being enacted. Nobody could have thrown a paper dollar, and there weren't paper dollars then. That was invented after Washington. How could you invent a paper dollar with Washington's picture, right? when he was 10, It was clearly silver. They threw it across, but the dollar he threw was likely pirate money. It was one of these piezo de ochos. It was captured probably from a Spanish galleon by pirates and circulated as currency here in the United States of America.
I'm going to go get a metal detector, go to that river where he supposedly threw it and find the original coin, because I think that'd be worth some money.
Yeah, I think that'd be worth some big money. You know, pirates played an important role in our revolution. The first head of our Navy, the Admiral of the Navy, was John Paul Jones. I went to John Paul Jones Elementary School in Tulsa, and he was considered a pirate by the British. Even today, he's called a pirate by the British. The real point is gold and silver were highly prized as they had been for millennia. Their money, and speaking of money, there are only three things you can do with your money other than perhaps throwing it across a river. You can give it, spend it, or invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room at Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about real money, transactional gold and silver, and how it can have an incredible impact on your life and maybe save the economy of the United States.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and we're talking actual pirate money today, the history of gold and silver. Pirate money is gold doubloons and pieces of eight. And, you know, they have origins that date back to ancient Greece. Ancient Greece is when they first started using gold or silver as money. I'm going to quote here again. I'm quoting from Wikipedia. Wikipedia is not a great source. I don't traditionally recommend it, but for historical things that people can fact correct and so forth, it's very valuable. But don't take your opinions from Wikipedia. But for history, it's pretty good. And I'm going to read Wikipedia on the silver standard. It says, the first metal used as currency was silver more than 4,000 years ago when silver ingots were used in trade. During the heyday of the Athenian Empire, the city's silver was the first coin to achieve international standard status in Mediterranean trade. For millennia, it was also silver, not gold, which was the real basis of the domestic economies, the foundation for most money of account systems, for payments of wages and salaries, and for most local retail trade. In 14th to 15th century England, for example, most highly paid skilled artisans earned money. It was in silver. Even the smallest gold coin, a quarter noble, was too much for domestic trade. Everyday economic activities were therefore concluded with silver as the standard of value and with silver serving as a medium of exchange for local, domestic, and even regional trade. Gold functioned as a medium for international trade and high-value transactions, but it generally fluctuated relative to silver money. Gold as the sole standard of value would not occur after various developments occurring in England starting in the 18th century. So, gold and silver, historically, is it money?
It is money. Pirate money?
Yeah, it's pirate. It's what pirates wanted.
You know,
wanted.
The beautiful part about having fun with the pirate money talk, we were testifying in Oklahoma a couple weeks ago. And there was a lot of boring typical political stuff in the news reporting and so forth. But one thing that stood out was this guy named Kevin Freeman, who was talking about pirate money in the legislative session there. I just thought it was kind of fun to see how that got picked up.
Hopefully they didn't think I was too much of a kook.
But once people understand, it makes people say, what is this about? And then once they understand it, what we're seeing is that movement across the country saying, hey, we need to get this in our state.
Yeah, Utah, you know, I was privileged to be with the former vice chair of the Fed, the head of the Utah Bankers Association, senators and representatives from Utah. And, you know, I'm talking pirate money. And, you know, people laugh a little bit, but when they realize the history of it, gold and silver have been long storied in history. And when gold passed $2,500 an ounce, a lot of people began to look more closely at the shiny metal. People have been buying gold for centuries, but there's a constant barrage of ads out there. You know, buy gold, put gold in your IRA. Curiosity has increased. And I want to make it clear, we do not sell gold or silver. We're not gold dealers. We don't have gold sponsors on this program. I read the sponsorship from Patriot Mobile. It's a cell phone company. We're not in the gold business. I don't even think of gold as an investment. Some people call it a hedge. To me, gold is a precious metal with monetary value. In other words, it's money. Same with silver. It's also a weight and measure by which other things can be valued. So let's understand that. Let's think about what money actually is. According to the Federal Reserve, money is a unit of account, a means of exchange, and a store of value. This is from DallasFed.org. So what does it mean to be a unit of account, Mike?
Just something that's easy to measure if I'm going to do a transaction or something like that.
Yeah. So you go out to dinner, you know what it costs. It costs $100 for a family of four, which is sad because it didn't used to be that.
But just a few years ago, it was half that.
Yeah. It's a unit of account. We can measure stuff by money. It's a means of exchange.
But you know, let's go back to what I just said, though. A few years ago, it was half that. But if I was trading in gold or silver, it's going to be basically the same price, right?
Oh, no question about that. And we're going to get to that, which is another reason. Everybody, don't just drop in and listen to this. If you're dropped in and listen to this, go back and listen at AFR.net or piratemoneyradio.com or wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, it's all there, Pirate Money Radio. But this is going to make sense because you're dealing with inflation. You're dealing with prices having gone up. So what do you do about it? We're talking about gold and silver, the history of it, but we're going to get into the real solutions on how you can do something important with your money that will maybe protect your family.
Yeah. And it's not a dream. I mean, this is something that's reality. At first, people think this isn't even possible. And then we get through this conversation a little more, people are like, how do I do it?
Yeah. Now, we'll get there. But gold and silver, unit of account is what money is. You can buy dinner and you know how many dollars it costs. That's one. Or you could measure it in ounces of gold, a unit of account. Number two, the other attribute of money, it is a means of exchange. So let's say you're a farmer and you've grown some wheat, but you want to buy a new tractor. Do you show up at the John Deere and say, here's X number of bushels of wheat, give me a tractor?
No, I can't quite pull that off. I wish I could.
Yeah. No, so you can't trade your wheat for tractors nor your chickens for college education for your kids. My kid got into Harvard and I'm here with a dozen chickens. Will that pay the tuition? No, that won't work for you either.
Although in a catastrophic type situation, you know, I shared this story with you several weeks back. I was sitting with somebody from Zimbabwe. Once their currency collapsed, and not saying that's going to happen here in the U.S., but we've seen hyperinflationary environments, he ended up having to trade his truck for two loaves of bread.
Barter never works out. One party gets ripped off. It never works out even. That's what dollars do, or units of account, or means units of account. Means of exchange, or the ability that you can transact in something that we commonly see as valuable. And finally, the third thing money is, it's supposed to be a store of value. That means it should maintain its purchasing power over time. So the dinner that costs $50 for the family of four now costs $100. Is that maintaining value?
Now, I'm afraid we're failing that test right now.
All right. So we have inflation. That erodes the value of paper money. How about gold and silver coins? They certainly meet unit of account. I can measure things in number of coins or in ounces of gold, and they certainly hold their value. We've got an example here from gasoline. How much does it cost per gallon? Just throw out a number that you recently
last
paid.
I saw about $2.70 a gallon.
That's here in Texas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
All right. So what if I told you could buy gasoline at 10 cents a gallon?
I like that idea.
You would like that idea? 10 cents a gallon? Well, here's a Washington Post article. Oh, it's 1980. I guess gas was 10 cents. You were driving in 1980, weren't
you? I was driving in 1980.
Was it 10 cents a gallon?
It was not 10 cents a gallon. I remember driving in 1980. Like that's 76 to 80, 60 to 80 cents a gallon, it seemed like in the Midwest. That's where I was at the time.
Well, Washington Post was bragging on this guy named Smitty at a gas station, and he would give you a gallon of gas for 10 cents a gallon as long as it was a silver dime, right? So a silver dime that would produce prior to 1964.
I like Smitty. What a great name. That just fits. Smitty will give you 10 cents a gallon with your silver, real silver coins.
All right. So in 1918, it cost two silver dimes to buy a gallon of gasoline, 20 cents. That was 1918, so 106 years ago. In 1980, that one dime was silver would buy you a gallon of gas. Today, the silver value of a dime is melted down. It's pre-1960, and don't melt down your dimes. It's illegal to melt your coins, but the silver value in that dime is about $2.30.
Wow.
The silver value of a pre-1964 quarter is about $5.75. So for the entire history, gas prices fluctuate. The entire history of gasoline-powered engines, the price of gasoline has fluctuated between 10 cents and 25 cents. And today, that silver value of those coins, a dime and a quarter, pre-1964, would be valued between $2.30 and $5.75. Will that buy you a gallon of gasoline today?
That would do it. You know, I remember when I was a very little kid, my grandpa owned a grocery store. And I remember from a very little kid riding on the conveyor belt in the grocery store or whatever, but grandpa pulling out and saying, you know what, these silver coins before 1964, these are the ones you want to hold on to because they're going to have their value. Never could I imagine what would happen between now and then.
And how right he was. Yeah, all right. So in 1920, this is a 1924 $20 gold coin, that would buy me, by any man, a great suit. Maybe ties, maybe a shoe, maybe shirts, but a nice wardrobe for a man with a $20 gold coin. Would $20 buy you a nice wardrobe today?
It's not even going to buy, I don't think I can even buy socks for $20 anymore.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. So gold has held its value because this gold coin right now is worth over $2,600. That'll buy me a really nice suit at a nice department store. So gold and silver have held their value over time. So they're a good unit of account. They're a good store of value. But the second point, are they a good means of exchange? Can I take this gold coin and go buy at the local coffee shop a nice cup of coffee and get change for it?
Now, you've tried that. They don't quite know how to respond to that.
No, they don't. No, and that's the point. It's not a good means of exchange. The value of gold and silver have retained their value. All right, so I want to play a fun little clip from Means of Exchange. You got that Mark Dice Man on the Street video where he offers people a choice between silver and chocolate?
Chocolate Appreciation Day. You like Hershey bars?
Yeah, definitely.
Just out here giving away some free Hershey bars or a free shiny silver bar, 10-ounce bar of silver.
Just take a chocolate bar then?
Whatever you want.
Cheers.
You take that over the silver?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, thank you. Just take one.
That's all right.
Please.
Nope, it's cool.
Your choice.
That's fine.
Just take it and run.
Wait. No way, dude.
Just one of them.
You're good.
I'd have the chocolate.
Well, if you want it, go ahead and take it. Thank you. Whew. So, 10-ounce bar of silver.
I'll take a Hershey's.
Okay, it's yours. Yeah, thank you.
Sweet, that's it.
Enjoy. Yeah. Enjoy it. You'll take the Hershey bar. Who needs a 10-ounce bar of silver, right? It's not so funny.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Whew. How's it going, man?
Free chocolate bar or free silver bar? Which one would you like?
Is it pure silver?
Yeah.
How heavy is it?
10 ounce.
10 ounces? What's that equate to? It's
Uh-oh.
What's the going rate of silver right now?
I'm not gonna tell you.
$2 an ounce, maybe?
$2 an ounce?
$20 an ounce.
Oh, maybe? Oh, okay. Now you're pretty much, oh, shoot.
Is this bad?
Might be bad for me.
Go with the chocolate bars. You know why? Because I can give them to my boys up there. They'll be happy with that.
Okay.
Oh, that's nice.
Thank you.
Is this YouTube?
Yeah.
Took the chocolate.
Free chocolate bar or a free 10-ounce bar of silver?
Bam!
Whoa! We got ourselves a winner.
All right. He took the silver. It took a long time for Mark Dice to get rid of it. They asked people, why didn't you take the silver? And the answer was, what would I do with it? I can't spend it. That's what we're talking about as means of exchange. So we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what money really is. And can gold and silver be money again? Right after the break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Hey, Mike, that Mark Dice thing was pretty funny. Everybody wanted chocolate over silver, except one guy.
The brand manager at Hershey's in Pennsylvania is just beaming with pride right now. People thought, I'd rather have chocolate than a $200 bar of silver.
Wow. I think gold and silver are money. There are six characteristics of good money identified by the Federal Reserve. It must be durable, portable, divisible, scarce, uniform, and acceptable. Okay, so is gold and silver durable? Absolutely. Is it portable? Not so much. It's kind of hard to carry around. Is it divisible? Well, sort of. You can divide this piece of eight into eight pieces, each worth a bit, which is 12 and a half cents. Old-timey, you know, it's basically an eighth of an ounce of silver, maybe a tenth of an ounce of silver. Is it scarce? Yeah, gold and silver are scarce. Is it uniform? Well, it's gold or silver. That's uniform. And is it acceptable? The Mark Dice video said, you know, to many people, it's not acceptable. Find that hard to imagine. They turned down 10 ounces of silver that would be worth now over $300. And he went through an entire package of Hershey bars before someone took the silver. And he did the same thing another time with a gold coin. I think maybe gold and silver currently fail the acceptable test. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I just wish I could find a man on the street like that that would give me that choice. But we can give people a choice with pirate money, and that's the exciting part.
Yeah, so we can fix it. Should we fix it? I don't know. We got paper money. Paper money is pretty good, right? It's fiat, means the government says this is worth so much, and you believe them, because fiat means let it be. Let this be worth $20. And the founders of this nation, they were big on paper money, weren't they? Is that true?
No. In fact, we should go to the video on that, because I didn't realize how clearly they stated they hated fiat currency.
All right. Well, let's play this quick video.
Washington said paper money opens the door to every species of fraud and injustice. Jefferson said paper is poverty. Hamilton said to emit an unfunded paper as the sign of value ought not to continue a formal part of the Constitution. The founders hated paper money, so they put a pirate money clause in the Constitution for our state to use. Learn more at transactionalgold.com.
All right, we're Pirate Money Radio. We're talking pirate money, and here's what the founders hated. This is a continental note that I've got. This was printed in Philadelphia in 1776. So it's pretty cool as a collectible. It says $4. This bill entitles the bearer to receive 4 Spanish milled dollars or the value thereof in gold or silver according to Resolution of Congress, Philadelphia, November 2nd, 1776. That's a pretty cool thing. Why did the founders hate paper money? Well, because it starved the troops. Because the continental note I'm showing you here was not worth a continental. That's an old-timey phrase that you may have heard. It means it was worthless. And Washington himself said a wagon full of continentals wouldn't buy a wagon load of supplies. It was supposed to be real money. The problem is they didn't have any gold or silver behind it. It was just a piece of paper. Today, our Federal Reserve notes don't have any gold or silver behind them, just pieces of paper. What would the founders say about our money today?
They would not like it at all, and they warned about it, so we can see that. I'm just looking at this continental here, and you know, here's the official seal, I guess, printed by Kitt and Sellers in Philadelphia in 1776. I guess it was backed by the printer and whatever promise you want to put on this.
Well, they put a promise. It was a promise only that they would pay to the bearer in gold and silver, and they said, we're good for it. Give us credit. So it was also known as a bill of credit, something specifically forbidden states to do. They're not allowed to produce bills of credit like that. Now, I'm going to show you something that's a little different for old-timey money. This is from 1837. So that was from 1776. This is 1837. This is a Bank of Kentucky note. Look at that and see what you notice on that.
12.5 cents. That's kind of an unusual denomination.
Right. Well, but think about that. That's one bit of a piece of eight. 12.5 cents. Read what it's redeemable for.
When the amount of $5 is presented, 12.5 cents when the amount paid 12.5 cents when the amount of $5 is presented.
In other words, if you're going to get one piece of eight, one of those silver pieces of eight, they'll give you that for that. But you have a minimum you have to transact in. You have to get at least 5 of these silver dollars. They would be Spanish mill dollars. So if you brought enough of those to cover $5, they would give you 5 of these coins. What they didn't want to do is give you a single piece of eight. But Bank of Kentucky in 1837 would store your gold and silver, if you were a citizen then, and they would keep it on deposit, and then they would let these circulate. Why? Why did they circulate these? To go back to the whole notion of money, whether it's transactable, whether it was durable, whether it met those criteria, and people would accept these. Now, somebody questioned them. They took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and they said, no, a state can do that. A state can create essentially warehouse receipts for gold or silver held on deposit, and those would function as currency, functional currency. Mm-hmm. So start to sound familiar with what you've been working
on? Yes, yes. So something that's functional, that's a unit of value, that's easy to transact with, and stable store value. What's the third one I'm missing there?
Unit of account, means of exchange, and store of value.
Store value, yeah.
So that meets all. This is a form of gold and silver, a representation of it that meets the criteria that makes gold and silver money. And then it meets that Federal Reserve definition, you know, including durable and acceptable. And the Supreme Court says, yes, According to the government of the United States, that is acceptable as legal tender. It's made legal tender by the state of Kentucky. So I think that, that's a pretty interesting idea. Should we go back to the gold standard? The gold standard, we lost it. We were on the gold standard where you could take your money. And this is a $20 Federal Reserve note of Bank of St. Louis. It says it will pay to the bearer on demand $20 redeemable in lawful money of the United States at the United States Treasury or at the bank of issue. Wait a minute. I thought this was lawful money. It's redeemable for, no, what it's redeemable for is one of these, a $20 gold piece. And you could carry this around because it's a lot lighter. You can stick it in your wallet and make it a whole lot easier, and it would be redeemable. That was, Federal Reserve was required to hold. Now, they weren't required, like Bank of Kentucky had to have 100% reserve of gold and silver. Federal Reserve only had a 40%, but that ended in 1933. What happened then?
In 1933, we saw under executive order of the president, President Roosevelt at the time, that on or before May 1st of 1933, all gold bullion and gold certificates are basically to be turned in to the federal government. So we were forced at that point, our grandparents were forced, if they had gold, to turn that in. I think they got paid $20 an ounce, and it was taken from them.
Yeah, so this is a $20 one-ounce gold piece. This is a $20 bill. You got this taken from you, and you were handed the piece of paper, which was no longer redeemable. They changed the language so it's payable to the bearer on demand. Instead said, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. That's where that came about. But
you know, you mentioned something earlier, too. I mean, we were at 100% gold standard. This is redeemable for that gold coin, and then we shifted to only 40% of that. Of the values held in gold. But in pirate money, we're going back to 100%. I mean, what you have got in your wallet is what you can spend, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're headed back that way. So and when they took us off the gold standard for us as individual citizens, they left the rest of the world on the gold standard, and the U.S. dollar was backed by gold. If you were France or China or you wanted to exchange your paper dollars, up until 1971, when Richard Nixon removed us from the last vestiges of the gold standard and said, nobody's getting gold for paper dollars. And then because of the inflation that happened, he implemented wage and price controls. Where does that leave us? Our money's backed by nothing other than your confidence in the U.S. government. It is biblically an unjust weight and measure from the Bible. So I did an experiment, Mike, and I asked, what is an unjust weight and measure? I asked that from a generative AI program that that Bing gave me, and it says, the phrase unjust weights and measures refers to the use of inaccurate weights and measures to cheat people, which is considered in the Bible. Proverbs 20:23 says, unequal weights are an abomination to the Lord and false scales are not good. The verse condemns dishonest practices that cheat people, such as using false scales, haggling, and corrupt bookkeeping. Leviticus 19:35-36 says, do not use dishonest scales standards when measuring length, weight, or quantity. Use honest scales and honest weights. And in the ancient world, creating a business could involve using two different sets of weights while pretending they were the same. Wait, isn't that what we're doing here? We're pretending this $20 bill and this $20 gold piece are the same? No, they don't weigh the same. They're not valued the same. But that's what our federal government did when it took us off the gold standards.
That was a good source. I think you could take the A off the AI overview. That sounds like just an intelligence overview from that perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to go back to, though, on that taking piece as we were just talking about that, because, you know, they took it from people in 1933. And one of the questions we get on pirate money is, you know, well, could that happen again? And they did not take it from the states. And the beautiful part about the legislation that we're helping to facilitate is we're going to have the states backing this under Article 1, Section 10, and AGs and everything else. So this is a very it addresses one of the objections I think it comes up there. Can it happen again where that taking
place? We're going to get into that solution that you're outlining in right after the break. But I want to close out with this idea that gold and silver, I did the same AI approach. I said, what does the Bible say? Bible verses that mention gold and silver. It's got Acts 3, 6 through 8. Silver is mine, the gold is mine, saith the Lord. Silver and gold have I none, but such as I have, I give thee in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Rise up and walk. Proverbs 3, that was Acts 3, 6 through 8. Proverbs 3, 13 through 18 says, blessed is the one who finds wisdom, the one who gets understanding, for their gain is better than the gain from silver and a profit better than gold. It concludes with this. In the Bible, gold and silver are synonymous with money. They're also seen as spiritual benchmarks that represent value and symbolic connections. That's kind of interesting. The Bible talks a lot about silver and gold. Here's another one in Job. If a man build upon this foundation, gold, silver, precious stones. Oh, no, this is 1 Corinthians 3, 12 through 13. Now, if a man build upon this foundation, gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, and stubble, each man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. All right, take a piece of paper that says $20 bill and take a $20 gold piece and stick it in the fire. Which one gets burned up and which one lasts?
Yeah, I'll go for the gold.
Absolutely. So I want to warn people, gold is not going to save you. Zephaniah 1:18 says, neither their gold nor silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day of the Lord's wrath. Ezekiel 7:19 says the same thing. They will throw their silver into the streets and their gold will be like refuge. Their silver and gold will not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. But for an economy, the Bible is explicit about silver and gold. It's money. It's useful. It won't heal you. It can't save you, but it is infinitely better than paper and is not consumed in the fire. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we'll give you a personal gold and silver solution you can implement.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
And I'm joined by my good friend and colleague, Mike Carter. We're talking gold and silver, pirate money, gold doubloons, and pieces of eight. Arrgh. Is gold money or an investment? I believe it should be money. Central banks around the world seem to agree with that. We've got a chart from Jerusalem Post that's showing central bank purchases of gold versus foreign official purchases of U.S. Treasury bonds. And you see the blue line, which is the central bank's purchase of gold, going dramatically higher over the last 10 years. And you see the decrease in central bank buying of U.S. Treasury bonds. Now, I bring that up because they apparently believe, these central banks around the world believe, that gold is money. Now, I want to make one thing clear. We don't sell gold or silver. We're not gold dealers. We don't have any gold sponsors on this program. They offer. We turn them down repeatedly. But the world is beginning to return, at least at the central bank level, to a gold standard. And that's something we left in 1971. Can we go back to 1933 when American citizens were taken off a gold standard by FDR's confiscation of gold? And Mike, you've been leading a charge working with states who want to implement Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution, which says a state can make nothing other than gold and silver coins legal tender. How does that work?
Yeah, well, the beautiful part of this is it's simple. We got the Constitution, we have the technology, and we have a movement happening across America to make this a reality. And this is not just a citizen movement, but it's working through the legislative piece. I guess it is a citizen movement, but we're seeing buy-in legislators at Treasurer's office, at different states saying, this could be good for our state. And so they see the practicality of this thing. And the reason, though, that we want to see this being done at the state level versus a private company is, much like we saw in 1933, the government said, we're going to take that. I'm taking that out of the system. A private company is susceptible to that same thing.
But we could go back to 1837 with Bank of Kentucky, where the Supreme Court ruled that a state can do this. Explain
yes.
that.
Yeah. And for each of you listening out there, there's three T's. And I want you to go to transactionalgold.com, go to Pirate Money Radio,
PirateMoneyRadio.com
to learn more about this, because this is an important message, but it's a simple message. It's real. It's authentic. This is not tinfoil hat stuff.
But how does it work? I can't walk into a coffee shop and take my gold coin worth $2,600 and buy a cup of coffee.
Right.
How would that work?
Right. Where you literally walk in, when you and I are both doing it every day, with a debit card. And that debit card, I'm able to spend anywhere I spend MasterCard. And in less than 200 milliseconds from the time I pay for my sandwich or whatever I'm buying there, currently it checks a vault in Switzerland, says, does he have enough gold for this transaction? What's the current spot price of gold? Okay, it's this much. Yes, he does. He wants to sell that. It will sell my gold at spot price, less than 200 milliseconds, and convert and pay that retailer in dollars. This becomes legislation, that retailer might decide to accept it in gold or dollars. That would be up to them. But it's as simple as that. And I've got it on an app on my phone, so I can see all the transactions broken out. You know, what did I spend? What did that cost me in grams and everything else?
We're not promoting this app. People ask about it all the time. But we talked about this in the book Pirate Money. And this guy in England starts tweeting me, or I guess ex-posting me, and saying, hey, I want to learn more about this. Turns out he created a company that does exactly this. Yeah. And we've tried it out. And it's worked for us. We're not recommending it. But it's called Glint Pay, right?
Correct. And a great heart. I mean, he's a guy that cares about, you know, fair weights and measures, and I believe is doing this for all the right reasons. Again, we don't have a sponsor. We're not endorsing this. But he's got a proven technology that's been doing this for 6 years, that's operating. He's been kind enough to come to the U.S. and testify with some of these states, and they're working through their due diligence.
Why don't we just do that? I mean, what do we need a state for? Why does a state need to be
involved? And that gets back to those three T's, which is the first one, trust. Because we get calls all the time from listeners that are saying, I want to buy gold. I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, but I don't really know how to do it. It's not like you just go down. Well, now you can go to Costco if you want to buy 1 ounce gold bars, I guess, and get it at Costco if they have it in stock there. But it's not typically an easy transaction. I'm just going to go buy something and do business as usual. It's also difficult when it comes time to sell it, because there's usually a fee and it's got to be assessed as this real gold and so forth. Imagine the ability of a state being behind this, where you know they're doing the vetting, making sure that it's pure, that it's the right gold and everything else. They stand behind it. They're storing it for you in a bullion depository. In Texas, we're the only state that has their own bullion depository.
But other states can use it or build their own.
Yeah,
right?
And there's discussions right now from some other states saying, hey, if we pass this, can we use the Texas Bullion Depository? Brinks is seeing the potential of what's happening within the states in this movement and saying, hey, we've got 4 gold vaults across the country, but we got a lot of cash vaults. We need to look at ways where maybe we can utilize those.
Is it expensive to buy gold this way?
No, that's the beautiful part of it. No, it's probably the cheapest way you can buy gold. You're buying bullion. You're not buying a collectible coin, but you're buying bullion at 0.5%.
Only have $100. Can I buy?
You can buy $100 worth of gold. You can buy 5 cents worth of gold. And that's the other beautiful part. Because historically, you've had to be rich or have a lot of disposable money that I can sit over here. If I need to sell it, I can. But now I can buy it, transact with it if I need to, or just hold on to it.
Is it popular?
It's definitely popular. And we've seen that in propositions that we've done in Texas here. We just saw that in Texas, we had legislation, the Republican Party, although this is bipartisan, put forth very specific language that says, hey, we need to do this and we need to make it happen. And they made it one of their top 10 strategic priorities. And we're seeing that same type of momentum in multiple states. The fact that this went from really from the time you wrote the book and we had interest here in Texas, we've seen that now expand to, you know, up to 30 states that have reached out and saying, what's this
about? Within about 12 months from the legislation, we had Proposition 7 pass in the Texas primary. 1.5 million Texans, 76.5% voted in favor. I want this. So that solves the trust problem. What about the taxes problem you mentioned? Right now, if I take this gold and I make a profit, and I have to pay tax on it, don't I?
And that makes sense, because I was looking at your gold and silver coins and the designs on it and the date on it, and like, that's pretty cool. This is from the 1700s. Do I want to go buy a stick of gum with that?
No.
I'm not going to do that.
It's collectible.
It's worth more than the silver. It's worth more than the gold that's there. But if all of a sudden gold becomes functional currency, just like what's in my wallet, where I can buy a stick of gum with it, if I can pay my taxes in it, if I can make a car payment in it, now all of a sudden it's transacting just like, because it's currency, you know, stable store of value, all the criteria that you've laid out previously, that's what this is. And so being functional currency, according to what we understand in the IRS code, we're not tax professionals, but you can see that, collectible coin, it's taxed already at a higher than the stock market out there, but 28%. If you have stocks, it's at 20%. But if this is functional currency and not an investment, but a store of value, we believe that you won't be taxed on it. So that stable store of value, we talked before about, it used to cost $50 for a family of four. Now it's $100 for a family of four to eat out there. Well, if I'm paying for it in gold, I'm paying for it in a standard value. I'm not really feeling the impact of inflation. If I'm paying for it in dollars, it's like, man, it cost me twice as many dollars.
This hurts. That is using gold as money. It is not a collectible. Yeah. Now, if I have this gold and I physically have it and the federal government knocks on my door and say, we demand under law, you have to give this over, you probably have to give it over. But what if it is in the Texas Bullion Depository? Well, they've got a big flag that says, come and take it. They won't let the federal government take it. And by the way, the confiscation didn't even allow for them to take the gold held by a state. All right, so I think those are the reasons it has to be done at the state level. Mike, how long do you think it'll take to get this implemented?
Well, most of the legislation sessions are coming up first part of this year. Some start a little bit later in the spring, some start earlier, some are there's even discussions of, you know, does it make sense to have a special session around some of this? That's not likely, but it's possible.
We got to get it passed soon. Yeah. That's the bottom line. Yeah, all right.
And from the time it passes, you know, I think based upon some of the study committees and so forth that we've seen out there, it sounds like this could move relatively quickly from passage to implementation in maybe as little as 6 months.
The technology is proven and it's available to the states. All right, I want to clarify. This is not a digital currency like Bitcoin. This is allowing electronic transfer like a debit card or exchange by written instructions like a check. You would be able to physically remove your gold and silver if you wanted to, and this would be totally optional. All right, I want to read from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. They wrote, how does money exist in the absence of paper currency? When people hold bank deposits that can be traded without ever being physical currency, those deposits become money. Remember, the money is anything generally accepted as a medium of exchange, store of value, and unit of account. If a vendor is willing to allow consumers to swipe their debit card and transfer an account balance from one bank account to another, that balance is functioning as a medium of exchange. If a bank account balance continues to be worth the same amount of goods and services as the paper currency, it is functioning as a store of value. Since both prices and bank account balances are quoted in dollars, the value of bank deposit can easily be compared with the cost of a good or service. This allows the bank deposit to function as a unit of account. Now, I want to point this out. That is, paper money is functional money as currency. What if you took the word paper money out and substituted it with gold and silver? Gold bullion, silver bullion. You get the best of all worlds. Real money that's useful with a debit card, not a digital currency, but an electronic payment with real gold and silver. All right, so we started this. I had this idea back in 1971 when we went off the gold standard. I became the Pentagon research provided it regarding the threats of the paper dollar in 2008. The Texas Bullion Depository was an idea in 2012 with the guy that came up with it legislatively, Giovanni Cabriglione. We talked on the steps of my house about this. I wrote the book Game Plan 2014, calling for a debit card on gold. Our first economic war room episode aired in 2018. The Texas Legislative Summit was 2022. The legislation was entered in Texas in January of 2023. National Legislature Summit was the fall of 2023. Pirate Money book was written and published in the fall of 2023. And the legislation was entered in a dozen states. Earlier this year, we just recently had our third annual Transactional Gold and Silver Summit in the summer of 2024. We have interest from 30 states and at least two dozen we expect to file legislation in this coming year. We could use your help. If you want this in your state, contact your legislators and get them to us. Read the book Pirate Money. Help us spread the word. People need to hear us at piratemoneyradio.com. Till next week, this is Kevin Freeman.